Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Zeitgeist Tapes. Happy New Year. Or was it a Happy New Year? Because what we spent our Christmas to New Year period doing, quite a lot of us, it seems from the public discourse, was getting really quite angry. And what were we getting angry about, Steve? This is Steve Fielding, my podcasting partner. I'm Emma Burnell. Steve, what were we getting angry about over the Christmas to New Year period?
I wasn't because I didn't watch it because I just don't watch ITV. I don't really watch television really at all. But apparently, on average, about 10 million viewers were getting, well, we presume angry, about Mr. Bates versus the Post Office.
Well, I think it's fair to say that there was a lot of public anger that came out of this. The papers suddenly sort of picked it up and ran with it, and there was a million people signed a petition to have Paula Venables lose her CBE. So I don't think it's a huge stretch to say that there was public anger as a result of this drama.
Oh yes, absolutely. No, I mean there was a significant rise in the on the anger anemometer, and quite. I mean, somebody did. I forget who did, but asked, you know, how angry is the public? How is it engaged, or is it politicians? Because it certainly was a very popular, well watched drama series, and it did have consequences, like you were saying. And so it has made, and this is maybe something to talk about a bit later on. It has made a political impact, but is it really politicians, you know, picking up on it, and then acting, and as if the public en masse, you know, are outraged. But yeah, this certainly a significant amount of annoyance and whatever. I mean, the one thing I would ask, however, is why did it take a drama series to get the sort of public angry? Because there've been lots and lots of other things going on TV, in the press. In a way, it's like one of those great moments when the British public sort of is morally indignant, which is often hugely comic and also very hypocritical because they're kind of angry because nothing's been done. Well, the re one reason why nothing's been done, matey, is because you weren't bothered with this issue until you saw nice Toby Jones and all these lovely people played by all the most beloved and talented TV actors of this and any generation playing the victims. Why did it take this to get you so annoyed? But anyway, that's my little rant over.
Yeah. Now, well, let's before we start, for anyone who hasn't seen it, which I think is unlikely given that they're A, listening to this podcast, and B, an awful lot of people who would listen to a podcast about where politics meets popular culture will have very much watched this drama. Mr. Bates versus the Post Office is the story of the kind of very slow rumbling scandal whereby the Post Office accused over 700 of its sub-postmasters and sub-postmistresses of robbing it, of stealing money, of fraud. And it turned out that what had happened was that it was a computer, a software error from the software that was provided by the company Fujitsu. And that Fujitsu knew this, and the Post Office knew this. And they just kept going on with these prosecutions. They ruined countless people's lives. Well, probably not countless because we've counted them about 700 odd. but many, many people's lives. And these were people who it didn't take, millions and billion pound contracts. We're not talking about the Michelle Moans of this world. We're talking about people whose lives could be ruined by losing 20, 30, 40,000 pounds, and just being unable to pay it back because they'd never stolen it in the first place. So they got into desperate trouble. Some of them were jailed. There were people who committed suicide since being accused from this. Now, obviously, we have to be very cautious whenever we mention suicide. You should never ascribe a singular cause to suicide. These are It's always a little bit more complicated than that, but the fact is that some of these people who were part of this scandal have in fact committed suicide. And it took as you say, it has been reported over the years, and this drama could not have been made without the German journalism that came before it. Amazingly enough, it was broken by a trade magazine, Computer Weekly, doing an awful lot of work. But there has been a BBC Panorama on it. It's been covered in the national press over the years. But it really took this drama to catalyse that real David and Goliath sense that the once one postmaster who kind of really galvanised the whole movement and tried to make it a movement rather than lots of very scared, lonely individuals. Alan Bates, and that's why the drama is called Mr. Bates versus the Post Office.
I mean, I'm kind of interested in how the drama presented these protagonists, the victims, because they're victims, aren't they? That
Yes.
we know they're innocent, and there's this powerful bureaucracy, so underpinned by technology gone awry. I mean, it's kind of these are kind of big tropes in all kinds of dystopian fiction, but these are purely innocent, good-hearted, decent middle England, even though Alan Bates goes off and lives in Wales, middle England, mostly white, lovely folk, lovely folk.
I mean, they
And I
are
think.
people who were at the heart of their community. That is what the post office often is. You know, people who go there for stamps and benefits and things
Yes.
and sending your postcards or your parcels.
Yes. But I thought it was interesting, and I wonder why they did it, and it might have been for good dramatic reasons or not. But the first episode, all the victims were white, right? And then in the second episode, then they introduced the one sort of central, one of the protagonists they focus on the Asian woman who was wrapped up in it, and her husband. And she unfortunately tries to commit suicide while watching the rain on the TV, which of course we can all identify with, really. But they only do, but they only bring them in at, after they've established the lovely middle Englishness of the characters themselves. And they're all played by, like I said before, very beloved and very familiar character actors who have all established themselves as playing good folk, right? And obviously Toby Jones has got this, he's now the he's kind of, this must be one of the very few instances where the real person, I mean, Hollywood would have glammed up with the actor.
No, I
They
was
glam
looking at a
down.
picture of them all thinking none of these people would make it in Hollywood.
No, but Toby Jones, bless him, great actor. I mean, they definitely glammed down with him. But he's now established over a number of years playing on TV for the most part. These kind of lovable, ordinary, everyman characters, a bit quirky, decent, and determined in some respects, in the same way that this character, the real Alan Bates, was. And while I'm nattering, I want to get in one of the things that Toby Jones has done, which I think is very much overlooked, is Don't Forget the Driver, where he plays a coach driver kind of
Oh,
entangled in
you
illegal
keep talking to me about this.
immigration. Yes, I keep, yes. So I'm not critical of Toby Jones, but it's the way in which the victims were presented is kind of interesting, and maybe that played a part in the outrage that kind of came out of the program, which wasn't, there was no outrage because of the victims in reality. It took these lovable TV character actors in a drama that heightens everything to get the public to be outraged. It's kind of interesting the role that drama has played in this.
Yeah, I mean, I think what this drama did and did extremely well was absolutely trigger not just our sympathy, but our empathy. These could have been us, you know, ordinary people. This isn't the kind of scandal that looks like an episode of Dallas. You know, these are ordinary people finding themselves in a Kafkaesque situation and just constantly thinking, well, it will be all right because I haven't done anything wrong. Eventually,
Yes.
this will sort itself out. And it just didn't sort itself out.
Yes. But it's also a story, a reality, but which lends itself to very familiar stories. Like I was saying about the fear of technology. I mean, we talked about Failsafe in the last episode, and that was about how basically a computer glitch brought the world onto the verge of nuclear annihilation. You know, that technology is taking control of our lives. But on top of that, like the Kafkaesque, as you were saying, Kafkaesque bureaucracy, a faceless, or at least a blank-faced bureaucracy that's implacable. And it's a bit like, it is a bit like Kafka meets Ealing, right?
Or the prisoner, which we've
Well,
talked about previously.
yes, but it's kind of like the Ealing element is these lovely, decent people, you know, not working class, not quite middle class, but they're, you know, the kind of interclass, that so people, the common folk, small people, little men and little women. And the interesting thing is that initially it was also dealing with how we as individuals feel powerless, because each sub postmaster has their own problem with the computer, and they're all told
It's
it's
just
only you.
you. It's
It's
just you.
only you. It's only you. And of course, in the old in the Ealing films, it's a community of little people against an extraneous force. So one of the interesting things about the drama, and you know, the reality, I guess, is that they have to create their own community. That these individuals have to. I mean, one of the missions is for Alan Bates to get them to know that there's more than just
And I
them.
think that's one of the most powerful moments in the whole series, I think, when I think it's the end of episode one,
Yes.
where he, you know, they come together and he makes a speech and he says,
In
"We
this
were
little
all
village.
told we were the only one."
Yes.
And now they can never say that to us ever, ever again. We'll never be the only one anymore. God, I'm welling up just even thinking about it. It was
No,
very powerful. I mean, I
I
was in floods watching the whole
yes,
thing.
I wasn't crying, but I was getting a bit emotional. And I actually wrote down the quote, the one that you're referring to, when he says, "None of us will be the only one again," right? And that, I mean, to be honest, you know, that's about that particular occasion. But as I keep saying, you know, there's this wider stuff going on. And when ITV viewers are looking at it, they're probably watching it on their own, or maybe in a very small family group. And we have this fear, you know, of a great big bureaucracy kind of landing upon us and doing shit to us. I mean, one of the things that I picked up on was that when the sub postmasters discover there's a discrepancy, and you know, why? Because it shouldn't be. I've got the money's there, but the computer is saying it isn't. And then they ring up the helpline, and they're getting, you know, the well, you know, yeah, what, not very much help on the helpline. They're having to wait, and that's like a common experience that everybody would have had, that kind of frustration. So it kind of was maybe supercharging people's own lived experience, or a fear of lived experience, that you know, the postmasters were going through it in extremis, but we've all been waiting on a helpline, right?
Well, and I think if you think back to Little Britain, now I know lots of parts of Little Britain haven't aged well and probably shouldn't have been made at the time. But that computer says no sketch,
No.
that was very
Yeah.
successful because everybody recognized that sense.
Yes.
You
And
know,
everybody, sorry, yeah.
and outsourcing our human judgment to just this machine. And I think it, you know, it there were two ways of looking at that that really happened through the 90s and noughties. There was the sense from lots of people hanging on the end of a call center telephone, desperately pressing zeros to try and speak to a human being, but trying and failing a lot of the time. And then the other sense in government, oh, we can outsource loads of this thinking to machineries and algorithms, and isn't
And
it great?
the companies, yeah, Fujitsu, the
Fujitsu,
Fujitsu lights.
exactly.
Yes.
And that kind of sense that, oh, this will all be so much more efficient. And we, you know, that trade-off between human relationships and efficiency and where that lies, I think is really quite a big part of modern politics.
Well, I think we should talk about that, because obviously All of these changes, introduction of the Horizon machines and the reforms, as the Royal Corps was called, Post Office Limited, all started under New Labour. Obviously,
New Labour are obsessed with technology. Anything that they could buy a big, shiny, massively expensive private sector sourced computer system for, they would.
Yes.
And an awful lot of things that have fallen down since are as a result of them being snowed by people who knew a lot better than them in terms of what technology couldn't actually do, but they could tell them that it could.
I mean, who knows, had there been a Labour government elected, re-elected in 2010, and had there been a Labour government throughout this period, which there wasn't, who knows whether Labour ministers would have, or, you know, whoever was in charge would have responded in the way, in a better way than some of their Liberal Democrat and Conservative counterparts. But what I thought was kind of interesting was that this is, I mean, one of the big themes of this is about trust, because the post office, we're all meant to trust the post office. And arguably one of the reasons why that the post office itself, the leadership, Paula Venables, kind of doubles down on these issues is to defend the brand, to defend, you know, we're a trusted organisation. Therefore, we have to defend our reputations being a trusted organisation. How do we do that? By crushing these little people down to the ground. So it's, there's a lot of trust issues. And I saw on, you know, Britain's favourite news channel, GB News, that there were some of their presenters, Neil Oliver in particular, but of course he's like Looney Tunes conspiracist. He was trying to use this drama to sort of then foster greater fear. You know, the elites rule. This is all about the elites. And he was dragging in, not just because it being GB News, of course, who's to blame for all of this? Well, it's Ed Davey, of course, because he was a minister for a few years when he wasn't really doing what he maybe should have done. And of course, he's trying to bring in Keir Starmer, because he should have been aware of what was going on, even though it had nothing to do with him being DPP. So they were trying to basically to build on this drama to reinforce their whole attack on lack of trust in the state bureaucracies, because they're bad, so we should have smaller state and all of that. That was interesting that, you know, there are people out there in politics trying to take advantage of this. But in the drama itself, what did you think about the role that politics and the law were kind of shown to be agents in all of this? Because I thought it was kind of like a relatively even-handed sort of,
yeah.
You know, James Arbuthnot,
he comes out as quite the hero.
Yes.
I think there's a word that is sorely lacking often in our discussion of politics right now that I thought James Arbuthnot really embodied, and that's duty.
Yes.
And
some of the MPs that supported him that weren't depicted, but he took the place of the other MPs.
And I know David Davis has also done a lot of work on this and Kevin Jones from the Labour side. There have been people across party who've really, really pushed on this. I thought one politician in particular was slightly odd, in that completely jarringly for me, it really felt weird. Was Nadeem Zahawi playing himself?
Yes, that was odd. That was an interesting decision to get him to play himself. And actually, it raised
get him or allow him is my question.
Well, they shouldn't. Well, they would have invited that. He's under no obligation, but unless he was threatening with legal, I don't know. I mean,
he's bizarre.
Clearly,
it was just really weird, because I was like, oh, they found an actor who looks really like Nadeem Zahawi.
Yes.
That is Nadeem Zahawi, and it just took me right out of the drama. It was a really, odd decision.
It's a short but crucial scene. When the select committee, I forget the name of the actual select committee, but when a parliamentary select committee is questioning the post office and exposing their lack of cooperation to get out the truth. But I just thought, first of all, because I'd seen a clip of the real interchange with Zahawi and the post office leadership, and Zahawi in the real, you know, when he's actually doing it as an MP on the select committee, is very good. But the Zahawi, when he's playing himself, is really flat, and it's not, it just isn't as good as Sahrawi. And that then raised in my own mind about how it is, why it is that maybe this drama had the impact that it did. It's because the real people are rubbish. You know, people don't identify with real people. They have to be heightened
versions. Yeah.
Yes. And that's,
no, absolutely.
They've got to be played by Will Meller, you know, and they've got to be played by Toby Jones.
Julie Helmenhay.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And of course, what we saw there was 4 hours, which distilled 20 years of a campaign. So what we didn't have was poor Alan Bates boringly combing through documents for hours and days and weeks and months.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is how you get to those distilled moments. But if we, you know, if we'd actually watched the whole process, of course, couldn't do that. But you see what I mean? It is, of course, it's heightened because it's distilled for 20 years of campaign into a 4 hour drama. So the other thing that we wanted to talk about was, I think, something we both read yesterday, which was a column by David Aronovich on this.
In his Substack, which I think this is going to be the first time we've ever referred to a Substack in our podcast. So,
well, apart from my Substack, which we obviously promote constantly.
You mention it. You heroically mention it, Emma, but we don't think we ever discuss it, what you've said in it. You do mention it. And it's very worthwhile subscribing to, listener. But yes, David Aronovich on his Substack talked about Mr. Bates and race. I mean, I think it was very, very interesting. And some of the things he was saying, I'd also thought of when I was watching it, particularly the Ealing stuff. But about, is it the bit about the motives of the villain?
The villains are just villains. We don't really see their inner life at all. Where we do kind of get inklings of that with all of the key sub postmasters and mistresses who we focus on. We kind of get a sense of their personality, their personal lives.
Yeah.
We don't really see that at all with either Paula Venables or the woman with the confusing Dutch name, whose name I can't remember now.
Angela van der Bergen.
Thank you.
I wrote it down.
Played by the brilliant Catherine Kelly, who I adore.
She played Butters, though, didn't she? But sort of, kind of a slightly flaky, you know. You. I mean, I can see why she was cast in the role as the one. Because of the two, I think Angela van der Bergen is described as by
the
one
Ice Queen,
evil bitch, and all of that.
Yeah.
But at various points, they do speculate, the character, the victims do speculate, you know, why are they doing this? Are they incompetent or are they evil?
Yeah.
And they don't, the only person who's kind of really slam dunk identified as evil, and I think they want us to think that, is Angela van der Bergen.
Yeah.
But Paula Venables, she's kind of this blank faced drone.
She's
isn't
quite
she?
A blank slate, isn't she?
Yes.
Like one, and there's quite a lot of juxtaposition of her making hard nosed, very wrong decisions at the post office with giving a sermon because she was also a C of E ordained vicar.
Yeah, so the religious didn't come out of this very well on that basis.
But they
do juxtapose, don't they? They don't. Nobody says anything. The viewer is meant to draw their own conclusions.
But I think David's absolutely right about the fact that we don't. But the truth is, we haven't heard those people's self-justifications.
No.
Well, I love writing complex characters, characters who might be a little unlovable. So my last play was about a sort of fairly stroppy woman who was kind of comfortable and proud in her stroppiness, and basically an incel Andrew Tate inspired young man who ends up killing her. But both of them, I tried to make them as 3D as possible rather than just, you know, good and evil. And
Villain's got to have some edge.
But that's much easier to do, of course, with two characters that I've completely created from fresh cloth. Whereas, you know, we know from multiple interviews with most of these, because they've been desperately trying to tell their story to us for 20 years, we know what the feelings were of the sub postmasters, sub post messages. Whereas the corporates, of course, have been hiding behind the corporate veil as much as humanly possible. And therefore, we don't know them as human beings, as individuals. We don't know what led them to be this, as you say, stupid and or evil.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect we will at some point. I very strongly suspect we will. But Venels, I mean, my she struck me as being like a university vice chancellor, you know, somebody who's at the top, who can smile and hand checks over and all of that. But they're not really. They are, you know, they know bugger all about what's really going on. And that one reason why they've been appointed as university vice chancellors is by the because they're not going to ask. They're not going to ask too many awkward questions.
Yeah.
So there's people, but it doesn't mean they're not complicit.
But they're paid enough money that that's where the buck stops, I'm afraid.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. But there is that bit, and it clearly did happen because it's talked about. When they finally get to court and they get their legal vindication, that she is shown sort of she's writing an email basically asking for Fujitsu to confirm that, because this is at the heart of the whole thing, that only the post office postmasters, I always get it all wrong way around, had access to the computer. Mm. Nobody else had the ability to access their accounts. And we know that actually the Fujitsu could, right? And she's been going to bat, and her whole organization's been going to bat on the basis that nobody can, apart from the postmasters. But then she's asking somebody, you know, she's sending it out to everybody, can you confirm that is true? So she's complicit and she's just incompetent.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't think they're either or. Exactly.
Yes, they're both. She's both. Yes. It's so that's my interpretation, but they don't really, they leave the audience to make their own conclusions, I think.
No, absolutely. And I think, I think the audience, having been very much whipped up into a frenzy by Britain's Best Actors, and the little guy, David and Goliath storyline. Yes. I don't think they'd have been receptive to actually Paula Venels is, you know, struggling at home or whatever kind of aspect
she's got
to it.
Menopause issues or something. I don't know. But that kind of ridiculous attempt to get sympathy. But what did you think? Because there's a character who says, and I think it's when the select committee is convened, and you've got Paula Venels and Angela van der Bergen representing the post office, and then the rest of it is all men, right, on the other side. I mean, it is interesting. The gender bit might be a slightly interesting thing. One of the characters says, when she sees it's those two women, is it only women that run the post office, right? And that's the only little bit that's ever mentioned, because it is interesting that it is only, you know, those are the two primary evil villains. And there's always that. I mean, I know there is a whole literature about, you know, we just need more women doing all this stuff and everything's going to be better. Well, the post office is maybe not a case that anyone wants to look at, but they're not. I mean, in that particular instance, they're not. And it was interesting. It was a little man against these blank-faced or hard-faced women. Nothing else was made of it apart from that little comment.
I mean, I suspect the pushback argument would be these are women surviving in a man's world, and to do that, you have to be more macho than macho. But I do think
that's
it's
part
interesting.
Of the defense,
not a defense I'd be willing to give them in court.
No.
If you do that, you take the bloody consequences.
So
it's definitely an interesting angle, because it's true. I mean, there are other people who should possibly have been involved in this.
Adam
Crozier.
So,
interestingly, not mentioned in the drama at all.
That is interesting. I didn't realize that. Of course he was. Yes.
So yeah, he was at ITV and he was at the post office or Royal Mail, but I think it was when they were the same thing.
Yeah, when they were together. Yes. Yes. Oh, and of course, Peter Mandelson is hiding behind all of this because he's ultimately responsible for the whole thing to be turned into what, Post Office Limited. So, we've got Mandelson in the frame now. Good.
Mandelson's in the frame. But the politician who suffered most from this is Ed Davey. And that's been, at the very least, in part, a choice of Alan Bates, who released correspondence from Ed Davey saying, I don't see any point in meeting you.
Yes.
Which, and of course, Ed Davey calls for everyone else to resign at the drop of a hat. So our very, very favourite thing to call people up on in politics is hypocrisy.
Yes.
He's now got a postmistress standing against him in his constituency. There's a lot being made of it.
On
I
GB
don't.
News, anyway, certainly on GB News, they can't keep. I mean, they it's like they hate Prince Harry, and now Ed Davey's in the frame. But also, they're very keen to put Keir Starmer into the frame as well, in very highly, and obviously a very
I
highly
think, to
profile.
be honest, that's as much the Telegraph as anyone else.
Well, they're kind of the
The
same.
Tory supporting press.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I would say, in defence of GB News, which is at least part of my job, that it's as much a reform thing as it is a conservative supporting
Oh yeah,
thing.
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think GB News does, I interact with their audience on a regular, I see emails that come in. I don't tend to look at my social media after I've been on the channel, which I am on frequently. But I do see the emails that come in, and the people who are writing are, basically your lower middle class, older person who might
Stooges.
well have been a postmistress or postmaster.
Yeah.
Exactly the kinds of people who are being depicted on that screen.
Well, that's it. The Middle England, nice. Well, they think they're nice. Nice folk. And I think that was one reason why it was a success, the drama, because it depicted them in that way. I mean, I'm not saying they weren't like that, but they did, and then had Will Mellor playing them. But the politics, the consequences of this are kind of interesting. The wider politics of it. I mean, why they chose the post, first of all, why did they choose the post office lot
I mean,
when,
as soon as I heard about this scandal a few good few years ago, I thought there's a great play in that.
there's also one for Windrush, there's also one for Grenfell,
Well,
there's
this is it.
also
Everyone's
one
like
for
trying
lots
to
of
get
people on
ITV to do.
welfare, universal credit,
Absolutely.
screwing people over, lots of suicides and whatever, and people being, assessed as fit for work when they're not, and they all go and kill themselves.
Oh, God. Yeah, there's a wonderful drama to be written about the Pitt process. Totally.
So the interesting thing is why, I mean, I'm not saying that the post office people didn't deserve their moments, and they do deserve recompense, and that's a process this drama has clearly helped. But there are, others, and don't want to sound too Owen Jones, but others that
God,
involve
no.
non-white people, non-cozy Middle England people, and maybe not so friendly for an ITV audience to get too upset about. So it's kind of like stop the victims, but they're nice victims that we can all, nice middle class people, we can all empathize with.
I mean, I think it is worth saying about ITV, that if you watch, I mean, I only watch one soap now, and that's Emmerdale, which is an ITV soap. I mean, that's the most diverse village in the country. There is a huge racial diversity. There's a trans character. There are, of the teenagers, more than one is gay.
Yeah, that's soaps, but that all
So,
soaps have got
yeah,
those
but
kind
all
of.
soaps are like that. But I think it's a bit unfair to say that ITV is only kind of white middle England middle class.
No, I mean, no, I wasn't saying it is only, but it was interesting that of all those different things, they chose the post office, and that those characters, the real people, are of that demographic. So that increases the willingness of the audience to sympathize and get exercised, and for GB News viewers to get all kind of upset about it. And Daily Telegraph readers and Daily Mail readers, you know, all kinds of people, ordinary folk, obviously all of them.
Yeah.
So that's the
But
only
I'm
point.
none of those folk, and I got upset about it.
Well, I did. I
I
got,
mean,
you
I
know,
suppose I am
that
lower
speech.
middle class, but, you know,
That
other than that.
speech. Well, but also it was tying. But also there was all that kind of like, and I think it's in things in David Aronovitch's Substack where he talks about it's almost like the self-referential nature of this. It's sort of like this is a drama about a real thing, but then when Alan Bates wants to bring everyone together, he says, "Well, somewhere in the middle of it, middle of England," and you know his wife says, "Well, Birmingham," and for transport links,
Yeah.
yes, Birmingham, but he decides
To
to have.
literally put stick a pin in the middle of the map and
And it's this lovely little village, and it's a church hall, and it's kind of like, and I think David Aronovitch was almost saying suggest well he was suggesting that, well, this is all very like an Ealing film, but maybe Alan Bates, he's the choice of this village because he'd seen all these Ealing films, and it's kind of like a self-referential loop that we're all caught in, where drama plays a part in shaping our real actions, but also it does make us more receptive to certain storylines, you know, getting all very, you know, bit narrative theory here, that
Yeah.
this story, this real event, did lend itself to being dramatized in ways in which we're all familiar. Like
Yes. It
it's
didn't
been done
need
for
to do
generations.
the explanation work of putting a brand new narrative, because we all know the David and Goliath type story, that, yeah, that those tropes. So
Yes.
we could easily slot that into our imagination and just go, oh, right, it's the post office doing David and Goliath. Right, got ya.
Yes, it kind of is. Yeah. Well, as I rather cleverly said at the start, this is Kafka meets Ealing. I thought I should say that again, just in case anyone missed it.
I might put that in the show description for you there, Steve.
Yes, you do that. Yes, copyright me. So it. I mean, I loved it. I mean, I watched it. I saw three episodes back to back, and I thought I've got to go out on my bike or something because I can't watch all four. But it was very compelling, and it drew you in. And it is subtle in its depiction of the law and politics. You know, politicians are shown to be doing something, even though, you know, they get an independent, James L. Bothnot and the rest get an independent review, gets under select committee, although it still doesn't quite get there. And the law does, in the end, the law does deliver, even though it doesn't deliver all the money.
Yeah,
And
well, and
it's
that's
left.
interesting because the law delivers the vindication, but of
Yes.
course, they're still broke.
Well, yeah, that's it. It kind of takes you to a certain, because that's what it's interesting that the drama ends at a certain point where they get the vindication, but it's a bittersweet thing because it's like, yeah, okay, so we're all innocent and we've all been vindicated. Oh dear, but where's the money? Because we've all been screwed. And so this is the point at which real life now takes over.
Yeah, absolutely. Be very interesting to see if they do a sequel based on the last few weeks.
Who will play Rishi Sunak? He'll be available to play himself, I
Well, he
suspect.
could do a Nadeem Zahawi. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah,
And on that terrifying note,
Oh, right, okay.
I think we should probably wrap it up.
Yes.
Have you any final thoughts?
I just, no, my final thought is that Rishi Sunak is so bad at playing himself, he might be good at playing himself, playing himself.
I mean, maybe he's the
Yeah.
anti-Zahawi. Who
Yes. That's it.
Brilliant, lovely. Where can people catch up with you, Steve?
Well, I'm on Twitter, aren't I? Or
You,
whatever it's called.
whatever it's called now, yeah.
X or Twitter or whatever. I don't know. I
Paul
wouldn't bother
Prof
though.
Steve,
Yes, I wouldn't bother.
and I'm Emma Burnell underscore on the various social medias. And as previously mentioned, you can sign up for my Substack, which is Hard Thinking on the Soft Left. Just to say thank you very much to Lord Stuart Wood of Anfield for our theme tune. And this has been a Political Human production. If you've enjoyed this, please, please rate and review us, because it does really help new people to find the podcast.